Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Formerly known as ISIS or ISIL, the so-called Islamic State, or IS, has declared a worldwide caliphate. Their leader is Ibrahim Samurai. His followers call him their caliph, and their dream? A Sunni state to rival the Ottoman Empire. So Middle East politics can be confusing to begin with, right? Charles Monroe Kane reached out to Middle East expert Juan Cole to help him make sense of the Islamic State's caliphate declaration.
The time has come for those generations that were drowning in oceans of disgrace, being nursed on the milk of humiliation, and being ruled by the vilest of all people. After their long slumber in the darkness of neglect, the time has come for them to rise. Is that just rhetoric? But there must be some historic precedent that has some romantic appeal for people, isn't there?
No, it's all imagination. There's no reality to it. The fact is that there has been no widely recognized caliphate since the Mongols killed the last caliph in 1258. So this is all about colonialism and the colonial heritage. Most Muslims were ruled in the last as much as 400 years by Europeans, by European Christians, and they were humiliated. I mean, the French went to Algeria in 1830 and stayed until 1962, and they were only gotten rid of by a horrible civil war. And what was the French message to the Algerians? That their religion was barbaric, that their language was inferior and only useful for kitchen purposes like taking out the garbage, mm-hmm. and that they would not be allowed to live in the nice parts of Algier, and that the French civilization and the French people were in every way superior, and moreover, that they were just going to annex the Algerians and keep them around as a subordinate people. And there were debates in France about whether it was even possible to civilize them. So this is very humiliating to people to mm-hmm. be ruled this way, and the Algerian case is not unusual. And then after World War II, when there was decolonization, often these countries became ruled by military cliques. So sure, you know, there's a lot of grievances and resentments, but the idea that Ibrahim Samurai is going to save them from all this by cutting off people's heads is I say, it's a crackpot theory.
But Ibrahim Samurai and what, ISIL, ISIS, Islamic State, whatever, as they transform their name, they're appealing to someone about something. Why is it that they're using this language, calling themselves Islamic State? What if you're saying that people don't care about this, this isn't important to people, why are they tapping into it?
Well, what I said is almost nobody believes in the possibility of a restored caliphate or wants one. Most Sunni Muslims are now organized by their nation state. They became kind of like, you know, Lutheranism. There's a Swedish Lutheran church and there's a German Lutheran church, and people are perfectly happy not to have a pope. And so Sunni Islam has undergone a kind of reformation in that regard.
You clearly feel, from doing all of your reading, all the reading I've done about you and what you're saying now, that ISIL or the Islamic State, whatever they're called currently, that they're not the future. They're nothing. They're not going anywhere outside of Syria, in Iraq. What is the future then for that area? That region has some serious problems, from Libya to Syria to Iraq. Man, the legacy there. What is the future then?
Well, I think Tunisia actually so far, and things could go wrong there too, but so far is actually a pretty good counterexample of how a country could go forward from an authoritarian regime towards a more democratic system. And it was by compromise. Tunis is a small country of 11 million or so.
Right.
But it's a big intellectual center, and it's influential. And it has a deep division between the religious right and the secular liberals and leftists. And it has a very substantial number of leftists. It has very vigorous trade unions. And in the elections that were held after the revolution in 2011, the majority of seats in parliament went to left-of-center parties. So the New York Review of Books made fun of me for saying that some of these movements look a little bit like Scandinavia, but I mean, that's the shape of the Tunisian parliament. But they also have a religious right, and it was the single largest party, even though it was a minority. And they got through the last 3 years by by compromise, and it wasn't always easy. And the youth played a big role by coming out and demonstrating and hooking up with the labor unions and the student unions to mobilize people in the streets to put pressure on the parties to negotiate and to compromise. So this constitution that they passed in early January of this year, it gives women and men equal rights. It does not recognize Islamic law as the source of law, even though it was crafted largely by a religious party.
We should pause, and that's a big deal in the Middle East.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Is that where we look then? If we're going to look to the future, you know, 30, 40 years from now, is that where we look then to the future of Islam? Not the caliph murdering people and beheading people. Do we look to Tunisia? Is that the realistic future where it's going?
Well, I think it's one possible future, and it's a future that's entirely, achievable. It just depends on whether political elites and social forces are willing to do the hard work of making compromises.
It must be frustrating for you, all these examples in your book of like these tendencies toward liberalism and democracy in the Arab world, towards secularism, which was much larger than I thought it was. That's absolutely not the story we hear from mainstream media or the story that's being drummed to us from anyone about the Middle East. Why do you think there's a story being told that we hear and then there's another story that we don't hear?
I think there's a tendency in American journalism and public officials to talk about the Middle East in religious terms. While one understands why that should be, because, you know, it is the religious radicals that have had the most impact
sure.
on the United States since 9/11, it's just not the only thing that's going on over there. And actually, the countries that we tend to focus on, like Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, are quite peculiar in the region as a whole.
Right.
So actually, even just being a mild religious fundamentalist now in Egypt could get you in trouble with the government.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Actually, you know, so it's not like Iraq at all.
It's not even close. You know, I was thinking about the Arab youth. You got Ben Ali in Tunisia. You got Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. You got Gaddafi, of course, in Libya. You got Saleh in Yemen. And then you got Morsi again in Egypt, all overthrown by youth. Are these guys connected? Are the youth connected? Or do they see themselves as stuck in their nation states dealing with their own particular problems? Or do they see themselves like, hey, this is a pan thing and that we're working together?
Well, they are connected. It's very clear at their Facebook pages, Twitter. It's social media that connects them most easily, although they also do travel and visit each other. They gave each other advice, you know, how to deal with tear gas. Apparently, Pepsi is good.
Is there like a metaphorical caliphate being created in the Arab Peninsula where people are, in a sense, creating a new empire, but it's based on secularism, based on millennial values?
Well, they don't. The secular youth don't use the word caliphate, but in the sense that is there a civilizational set of values and impetuses that they want to spread around, for sure. I mean, it's striking to me that the young people in the Arab world mostly want European-style parliamentary democracy, and they want free and fair, transparent elections. But I think, you know, these movements are fluid, they're non-hierarchical, they're networked, and they're staccato. You know, they pop up from time to time here and there when there's a crisis or when people feel strongly, and they put pressure. They're not like a political party that is institutionalized. And that's both a strength and a weakness. The strength is they're not constrained and they don't get co-opted by the establishment necessarily. But the weakness is that the lack of institutionalization can also, you know, become a lack of consistency.
Juan Cole is the author of The New Arabs, How the Millennial Generation is Changing the Middle East. Charles Monroe Kane talked with him.
رئيس البلاد هاني اليوم نحكي معاك باسمي واسم الشعب الكل اللي عايش في الاحلام 2011.
And we are listening to the anthem of Tunisia's Jasmine Revolution. The song is Rais Le Bled by the Tunisian rapper El General.